Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters, Art and Swelling with Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Mike Tassoni. Today is Wednesday, September the 23rd. Ben, the Toronto Blue Jays are a playoff team. We've known this for some time. They have not officially clinched yet, but they're going to the postseason. I feel very comfortable saying that affirmatively, despite the fact that they have not necessarily been playing playoff caliber baseball over the last week or so, essentially getting dummied by the New York Yankees more often than not. And you know what? You know what? Actually, when it really hit me was last night, I was watching that Cleveland White Sox game. I went back and then watched some of that after the Jays game because it just looked like it was an insane game just from some of the highlights and some of the, you know, just some of the talk around it. And it was super intense and playoff atmosphere, and like the plate appearances were all like, you know, really kind of pressure packed, and you know, the competition level was really high, and like you could just feel it, right? Like you could just kind of feel the energy coming off of that game. And the White Sox bring in this guy who they like just drafted in June, and he's out there throwing 102, and Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez are having these like massive plate appearances and big hits, and you can just like feel it coming out of the dugouts. You don't really get that feeling from the Blue Jays lately, partly because, you know, they haven't necessarily been playing that well lately, but also because like either, you know, if the Blue Jays win lately, they win by a lot. And if they lose lately, they kind of lose by a lot. Like all those tight games from earlier this season are just gone now. And they don't play them anymore. So it doesn't really just like have that late September playoff push feel that you might expect at this point in the season.
Totally. I mean, you compare it to, and not that we have to bring it back to 2015 all the time, but you compare it to 2015, right? You think about Jays and Yankees at that point in time. And I'm thinking about the Russell Martin home run in Toronto, huge moment. The fans are into it. The dome was open. Everyone's just loving it, right? Like that's the kind of standard that was set and will never be surpassed. I mean, when it comes to a stretch run, the 2015 Blue Jays are, you cannot beat that stretch run. But I think that in contrast to that, this year, you're watching the Blue Jays and Yankees, and I'm thinking of Bo Bichette's comments the other day when he's asked about the rivalry, you know, between the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and he kind of goes, I don't know if you can call it a rivalry. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. He goes, they basically handed it to us for three games in New York, and subsequently in another game since Bichette made those comments. So it has been very one-sided, and yet the Blue Jays are going to make the playoffs, and I think there's no sign that's more telling of that to me than when the starting shortstop of the team ostensibly chasing the Blue Jays for that final playoff spot opted out of the season. Andrelton Simmons on the Angels. He goes, yeah, I'm good. Which, you know, if that's not a sign of just completely forfeiting and knowing you're done, I don't know what is.
That's enough for me. I'm going home. Like, you guys enjoy the final week. I didn't hear the reasoning behind that. Like, I'm sure he has a good reason. Like, why wouldn't you just take the final week and get your big league pay and stay around your teammates, right? Like, did you hear any kind of reasoning from him?
No. Yeah. I think he issued a statement, but it might have been COVID related. Certainly there's a health and safety aspect there, or, you know, he's going into free agency. Maybe he just wants to rest up. But either way, I mean, it's pretty telling.
Yeah, no kidding. And you never know. Like, some guys have, you know, they might have babies on the way, or they might have, you know, family members they want to spend time with. And, you know, a lot of these guys have, for the Blue Jays especially, like, they have, like, everybody across baseball now is coming into the quote-unquote bubble ahead of the postseason. The Blue Jays have essentially been in that bubble since they got to Rogers Centre a few months ago. Like, they have, you know, throughout this time been living in hotels and not going to bars and restaurants and, you know, not seeing their families as much as I'm sure they'd like to. And, you know, now this week, alternate training sites are closing and you've got the 40-man playoff pools are all kind of coming to whichever city each MLB team is in. For the Blue Jays, that's Buffalo. And then going forward, it's going to be the postseason. Like, the Blue Jays have a playoff game in fewer than 7 days. I kind of wonder, you know, if in the postseason we're going to continue to see some of the like sort of lopsided scores that we've seen, like, not just from the Blue Jays, by the way. Like, you can kind of like look around baseball and there's been like a lot of high scoring games lately. And there's been like a lot of these, like, I know the Blue Jays every night, it's like 11-5, 12-1, but it's not just them. It's other teams across the league. I kind of wonder if, you know, this strange season is wearing on guys a little bit. If pitching staffs are starting to get a little bit gassed, a little bit tired, which is kind of crazy to say because every team has this large bullpen right now. But I do feel like just the unique stresses of this season are starting to really take their toll on, you know, a lot of relievers and a lot of starters as well. So I kind of wonder if going into the postseason, we're going to continue to see like some of these sort of large score lines, you know, some of these like 7-10 and, you know, like 13-2 games that, you know, the Blue Jays have played lately. Like I could see that happening in the postseason.
Well, you know what? Even before, right? You look at the Blue Jays and Orioles, and the Orioles in the final series of a season, that's another lost year for them. I mean, that could be a chance for the Jays to really tune up offensively for the playoffs. And then even once you get there, who knows? I mean, at this point, it looks like the Jays would line up against the Tampa Bay Rays. That's a team with some really good pitching staffs. You kind of, at least when I think about playing the Rays, I'm picturing close games as opposed to lopsided blowouts the way you might see in Yankee Stadium or something. But either way, you know, the Jays, limited time to go, a few decisions to make, in a great position. And certainly, even though they haven't really earned it, as you say, Art, and they've played so badly for most of the last, you know, 8-9 days, and yet here they are in a really, really good spot.
Yeah, the magic number keeps going down, man, no matter how many runs they lose by. So here's how I would draw it up going into the postseason. You can tell me if you agree with this or not. So today is Wednesday. We know that Robbie Ray is starting tonight. Thursday, we know Hyunjin Ryu is starting on Thursday. Taijuan Walker would be lined up for Friday, and I would start him on Friday and have him in line to start the second game of the postseason. Saturday, Matt Shoemaker's turning the rotation, and you want to, you know, have him keep building up. Got up to 53, 54 pitches his last time up, out. See if you can get him up to 65, maybe even, you know, inching close to 70. Keep him building up ahead of the postseason and have him in line to start the third game. And then Sunday, assuming the Blue Jays have clinched, which they almost assuredly will have by that point, nobody of consequence in the postseason for me is pitching in that game. So I am, you know, asking Tanner Roark to go throw like 200 pitches, essentially.
Right.
And like, you know, you can bring in like Diesel. It's your time, baby. Like off you go. And then, you know, TJ Zoik after him and Wilmer Font, you know, maybe a couple of innings of Chase Anderson. And I am lining up Ryu, Walker, Shoemaker for the postseason. Because you kind of mentioned this before we started recording, and you're absolutely right. You know, the sort of the bullpen day that we had envisioned for this club in the postseason doesn't look as appealing anymore with some of the results out of that bullpen lately. You have to go with who is pitching well right now. And I really do think you have to kind of ride the hot hand into this wild card series. So I am, you know, lining up those three starters, Ryu, Walker, Shoemaker, and I'm going to try to get as much out of them as I can. And I am no longer going to sort of Milwaukee Brewers my way through one of these three games.
Yeah, you have to adapt, right? And the strategy that once looked the most, you know, logical and appealing no longer looks very viable. I mean, if you have Ken Giles go down to injury and Julian Merriweather go down to injury at this point, he's sidelined for at least 10 days, unclear exactly what his prognosis is medium term. Jordan Romano hasn't come back. Nate Pearson hasn't come back. Rafael Dolis is banged up with, you know, with a knee issue that continues to sideline him. So, you know, all of a sudden, the idea of a bullpen game, far from being the most appealing strategy, now it looks like a horrible strategy. You can't just go in and, I mean, who would it be? You go to, I guess, Bass, you know, would be good for a couple innings, or Cole, and potentially they'll get some reinforcements. We'll see what happens with guys like Pearson and Romano as they try to work their way back. But no, absolutely. You've got to go a bit more traditional when it comes to that starting rotation right now. And so that means Taijuan Walker, you know, I don't think you're pushing these guys to go three times through the order still. I think whether it's Taijuan Walker, whether it's Matt Shoemaker, I agree those are the likely games 2 and 3 starters. You go with them for a couple times through the order, and then you have Robbie Ray ready. And, you know, if you get to the part of the lineup that, I think Meadows is hurt now, but Lau, they got a lot of left-handed hitters, go to Robbie Ray. He can give you some middle inning depth. And then you try to get through the late innings with the likes of hopefully Cole and Dolis and Bass and make it work from there. But, you know, this team is going to have to hit too. So I agree. Most of the intrigue from a decision-making standpoint is on the pitching side. But, you know, this pitching staff is not in great shape right now. I mean, they have some guys coming back, but they have seen some pretty costly injuries in the last little bit.
Yeah. And assuming that they are playing the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, which is how things line up right now. And that's probably the most likely outcome. Things can obviously change, but I think it's most likely that the Blue Jays have at least two, if not three games at the Trop in the wild card series. I think Robbie Ray will be huge in that series, just as a lefty coming out of the bullpen, throwing hard. Like, I, you know, he already seems pretty max effort, like, as a starter. I don't know if there's more in there, but I mean, if there was, like, sure, that would help against the Rays lineup, certainly. And I think you have to use Ryan Barucki in some big spots in that series as well. When you think about the lefties, obviously, like, he hasn't looked his best lately, although he's been somewhat better in his last couple outings. So I think that he'll be big in that series as well. And then if you can get Jordan Romano back to health, if you can get Julian Merriweather back to health, those are, you know, two massive question marks. And those would be two really big pieces coming out of your bullpen. Then Nate Pearson. You know, what's Nate Pearson going to be in this series? We haven't seen him yet. We expect that he'll likely be activated sometime later this week because, you know, you got to think you want to get him an outing in a real game before you throw him into a postseason game at, you know, in a must win at Tropicana Field against the best team in the American League. So I would think that he's going to be activated at some point here this week and you'll see him on, you know, a big league mound, probably not in the highest leverage spot to begin with, but, you know, sometimes game flow, game script kind of dictates, you know, what you have to work with. So, and Nate Pearson needs that experience and needs to just get off a mound in the game. So those are some of the, like, the starters we mentioned, and then like Ray, Barucki, you know, Merriweather, Romano if healthy, and Pearson, like those are kind of, they're really important guys for me out of, you know, basically in that pitching staff in this three game series. Like, it's only three games, so you might not use that many pitchers, right? Like, you know, Shun Yamaguchi might not pitch, you know, you like Bass and Dolis are there, you might only use those guys for an inning each in a two or three game series. Like, it kind of depends how it plays out and how much you get out of your starters, but every inning in a three game series is a leverage inning, so like every inning has to be treated that way, and you got to throw your best at the Tampa Bay Rays, who are going to be countering in the rotation, by the way, with Blake Snell, Glasnow, and Morton, I would assume. Certainly Snell at the top, and then I would think Glasnow and Morton after them. So the Blue Jays are going to have the work cut out for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny. Last week I was kind of suggesting the possibility that Merriweather would belong among the Blue Jays' most important arms, and he's gone now. I think at this point, if you're looking at who the Jays' most important arms are, obviously Ryu is number one, and what a difference maker he's been. I, you know, without him, they might not even be in the playoffs. So, yeah. I mean, that's huge. Then Taijuan Walker, obviously, Robbie Ray, Matt Shoemaker, I think, is in that discussion right now. And Anthony Bass has to be in that discussion too. So those are, you know, along with Cole, Barucki, Thomas Hatch, those are kind of some of their core arms that they're going to be relying on. I think we will see those guys in the course of the first couple games of the playoffs. It's a question of, you know, how long does Charlie Montoyo stick with them? What other options does he have? It would be huge if Pearson can come back. But, you know, at some point, we're running out of days. Like, at some point, he's got to get off a mound. He's got to pitch in a game situation. I think it'll happen, but at this point, there's still no guarantees on that front.
Yeah, I think I went with Robbie Ray last week when we talked about the second most important guy in the Blue Jays staff, and, you know, it's somewhat holding up for now. Yeah. I think, like, if you're going most important, like, I just think it has to be your three starters in those games, just with the way things are trending right now, right? So it kind of has to be like Ryu, Walker, Shoemaker. But I think Robbie Ray is right there, particularly when you think about the opponent, when you think about, you know, who's kind of on form right now. That's going to be really interesting to see how he's used in that series. I think he's important. We almost don't talk enough about Ross Stripling, I feel like. Like, he gets kind of like lost in the shuffle a little bit, and like obviously not getting the results that he wants to this year, but like Blue Jays, you know, acquired him at the deadline for a reason, and like, you know, he's under contract for a couple more years after this. Like, he's kind of a piece of this team going forward, whereas Robbie Ray and Taijuan Walker might just, you know, only have a month in a Blue Jays uniform. How do you think Ross Stripling kind of fits into the pitching plans going forward? Like, what kind of role do you think he plays on this staff for the rest of the season and into the postseason?
I think he's more of a division series guy if they get to that point. For the wild card round, I don't really see a big role for Ross Stripling, at least in a high leverage moment. I don't see it. Maybe, you know, if they're like, let's say they're down four runs in game one of the ALDS, sure, I could see Ross Stripling being a guy that they would go to in that spot. I don't know, wild card round, only three games. I mean, do you see it differently? I don't see Stripling as being a guy they would go to.
He's not my first guy in leverage, certainly. But, you know, the Blue Jays sometimes have had sort of matchups that they like that aren't apparent by what we can see on Fangraphs.
That's
right?
Very true.
As we've seen a couple,
very true. Kevin Biggio batting eighth.
I mean, you know, there's been a few things, right, this year where, like, obviously, like, the Blue Jays have all the information we have available to us. So if our information doesn't line up with what they are doing, they must have something else. So, I'm not, you know, ruling it out that there is matchups that they would like with Stripling in that series. Like, I don't know. I just feel like he gets so lost in the shuffle. And we haven't seen him pitch that much lately either is kind of the thing. But I think I would probably be going to a, you know, Ross Stripling out of the bullpen before, like, you know, a Chase Anderson, who looked fine, like, out of the bullpen on Tuesday, right? Like, pitching out of the, you know, out of the stretch, kind of, you know, trying to correct some of his tipping issues. He, like, struck out a bunch of dudes. Like, his peripherals on the season actually are, like, totally fine. Strikeouts and walks, like, it's just kind of homers that have gotten him. So, you know, like, I still think that, you know, Ross Stripling would maybe be above him on the kind of bullpen depth chart, as it were. But, like, you know, if you have your druthers, you're not really using either of them in a wild card series in a moment of consequence.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think if you're looking at the Jays roster and they release their 40 player pool, so we have a sense of who they're looking at for those roles, they have a lot of depth type of multi-inning relief options, including Shunya Miguchi and TJ Zoik. And I think at this point, Tanner Roark and Chase Anderson belong in that conversation, along with Ross Stripling too. And to me, yeah, Anderson or Stripling would probably be the two that you're most comfortable going to in high leverage situations. You know, you could look to the others, and I know Zoik looked good in that one game, but no, that's, I wouldn't go there. And I think Yamaguchi too, like, just looking, and not to, you know, I know he recovered from those first couple games, but you look at the season numbers for guys like Yamaguchi and Anderson and Roark, and just, it hasn't been good. These guys are not having good years. You don't want to go to them in high leverage. So I would go to Stripling ahead of those.
No, you have to go with who's on form right now and who's pitching well. Like, to me, that's why, like, Tanner Roark isn't on my postseason roster. It's nothing against him. Like, he's a great guy. Like, and I keep saying it. Like, one of my favorite stories in the spring was on Tanner Roark. Like, it was, you know, one of my favorite things I've written this year was about Tanner Roark. I think he has a future in the major league, certainly. I think he's trying to figure some things out right now. And I think he's really getting hurt by the long ball quite a bit. But you got to go with who's on form. You got to go with who's pitching well, man. Like, that's just what it is. And he's just not pitching well right now. So I just don't think that he's on that roster, because I don't really see utility for him in a three-game series. You get to a divisional series, yeah, you might end up needing him. But in a three-game wildcard series, like, I just don't see the utility for him. So I think that he, like, eats a bunch of innings on the last day of the season. And that's kind of his way of, like, contributing to this Blue Jays, like, playoff effort, is that he eats a bunch of innings the last day of the season so that you don't have to use, you know, like, a high leverage dude on the last day of the season in a non-consequential game.
That's right. I think that makes sense. And especially, I mean, if he throws 100 pitches on Sunday, you can't put him on the roster, no, exactly. Right? Whoever starts that Sunday game, if it is, then they could do a bullpen. But if it is a traditional start, whether it's Anderson, you know, potentially Roark, somebody else, that guy is not going to be on the playoff roster because he'll need a few days to recover. So I think that makes sense. Division series, another story if the Blue Jays get to that point. And we have many ATL episodes coming before that point. So no need to get ahead of ourselves here. But yeah, for the meantime, maybe that means, you know, you carry an extra infielder like Santiago Espinal. Maybe that means that you carry a Patrick Murphy. I mean, it's kind of bold. Like, I don't know that you're going to Patrick Murphy two, three appearances into his major league career in a wild card round game. I mean, that's a bit of a leap for me. Hey, you got to go with who's pitching well.
Based purely on form right now, like, I'm taking a Murphy over a Font, like, on the roster,
I mean,
period.
Font's not even in the discussion.
You mentioned Zoik. I'm taking Murphy over Zoik on a postseason roster, honestly. Like, you know, like, he's a good pitcher, man. Like, the league hasn't seen him. Like, I know that, you know, he's young in this league, but, like, he's 25, right? So, like, at a certain point, like, let him face some leverage and see what he can do. Like, he's got great stuff. He's not gonna be my first arm out of the bullpen, you know, if I've got, like, a 2-1 lead in the first game of the series at the Trop or something. But, like, I think that he could have some utility on this roster over some of your other options. On the position player side, and you raised that a little bit, it'll be interesting, right? If you do take that extra infielder, if, you know, Espinal factors in, like, obviously you got VR, and, like, all things being equal and everybody being healthy, I don't think VR is in your starting lineup in, you know, the first game of that series. But, you know, do you have both him and Espinal off the bench? Do you have a third catcher? Is sort of another thing that I would be looking at. I would kind of argue for it just based on the way Alejandro Kirk has looked lately, not only offensively, which obviously has been great with like every ball off of his bat being a rocket, and how well he seems to do against, you know, velocity, and the Rays obviously featuring a lot of that. Also based on how he's looked defensively, which, like, I don't know, it's early. Like, we haven't seen that much of him behind the plate. But I think about that game on Tuesday and how often he had to come out to the mound to conference with Blue Jays pitchers because they were going through different sets of signs and he just wasn't on the same page with them. And you saw kind of like Vlad was kind of having to come in and, you know, help him with the conference of the pitcher, which is like kind of like a funny thing to think of like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. like helping the Blue Jays defense here on the infield, 21-year-old in the majors, right? You know, I just think that you want Danny Jansen catching in the postseason, certainly for Ryu in game one, probably in game two with Walker too, to be honest with you, because he just is a more sound defensive catcher at this point. And like purely on, you know, not only what we've seen, but just on experience, like Danny Jansen's done it a lot more. And so I would much rather have Danny Jansen behind the plate and then get Kirk in the lineup as your DH, right? Like get his bat in there, which is really what he's bringing you right now. Like that's why he's on this roster, was to add some thump and to, you know, like, kind of replace some of what you lost with Rowdy Tellez being out and when Teoscar was out earlier this month. So to me, carry that third catcher so that you don't expose yourself to as much like flexibility risk with having two catchers in the lineup. Have Caleb Joseph or Reese McGuire on the bench if you need to replace your catcher later in the game. Have Kirk as your DH and Jansen as your catcher. And then you've got the defense of Jansen and the offense of Kirk. Everybody wins.
I think I'm mostly with you there. I think like Kirk, I mean, Kirk's on this playoff roster, no question about that. And, you know, has really impressed. Not a lot of guys can hit velocity the way he can. Small sample, but it's the only sample we've got. And, you know, it's also after, you know, basically being sidelined for more than a year and not hitting in games. So I think, you know, even though it is a small sample, it's an impressive display by Kirk. So you've got that. He's on the team. I totally agree that you roster a third catcher. And not to say that you would have to. I mean, if they only had 25 roster spots, maybe you try to get by without it and you couldn't get creative and make it happen without rostering, let's say, a Reese McGuire. But I think with 28 spots, you just give Charlie Montoyo that extra freedom, that extra security. He's not going to run out of catchers. He's got someone on the bench. You don't play Reese McGuire. He's not getting into a game. He's just there in case. So I'm totally with you with all of that. I think, though, I would start Kirk probably in game two behind the plate and keep the DH spot open for somebody else. You know, maybe Vlad's DH, you have Travis Shaw playing first, for example, to give yourself a better defensive team. Maybe it's Teoscar at DH and you have Jonathan Davis playing the outfield again for defensive purposes. But I think Jansen in that scenario can rest. You're not asking him, depending on the schedule, and there are a lot of variables here that we don't know, but depending on the schedule, you're not having him catch two games in the span of 36 hours or, you know, day game after a night game. You rest these guys, you give them each a little bit of time. So all that to say, I think you use Kirk and he gets at least one start, maybe two starts. Like, we'll see how the next 5 days go offensively for him. But I think Kirk starts at least one of those games.
The one scenario I could see would be if you just really didn't want to play Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first base.
First, let's hear from Charlie Montoyo on a decision that was made to transfer Vladimir Guerrero Jr. across the diamond. He will now primarily be a first baseman and designated hitter. Here's the manager.
He's going to see more options at first base and DH, but we're going to keep the third base option open too because he can play there too. But for now, for this camp, he's going to be playing first and probably during the season, he's going to play first and DH.
Who it has not gone well so far this year. We have seen mistakes. He keeps going to his right on balls that he shouldn't. We've seen, you know, balls that you would expect a major league first baseman to be able to dig off of, you know, imperfect throws coming from the other side of the diamond. The Vlad has not been able to execute. You've seen that. And look, the guy's got 30 games at the position in his life, and they've all been at the majors, and he's learning it at the big league level. Like, you got to have some patience there. Like, it's going to take some time for him to pick it up. You don't have time. You only got 5 games left in the season, and then you're in a do-or-die playoff series. So I can see you saying, well, our best defensive infield behind Taijuan Walker, who does give up some contact, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at DH and having Travis Shaw for space. I get that. But I almost wonder if the upside of that is smaller than the downside of Alejandro Kirk behind the plate having to go through different sets of signs of the runner on second base. Taiwan Walker is humming. He is cruising along, and he is trying to find a rhythm and a tempo, and he's continually being interrupted by his catcher having to come out to the mound and be like, wait, which signs are we using? You know, and he is not on the same page as this catcher, and he's having to shake a lot and like, I don't want to throw this pitch, I want to throw that one. And they're having to go through this, like each pitch is kind of getting like longer and longer in between it. And Walker can't find a groove. And all of a sudden he's frustrated and he grooves one, and you know, Meadows hits it out. Like, you know, I kind of said last week, like no position on the diamond like impacts your run prevention more than catcher. And I think that for the Blue Jays to win this series, if it is with the Tampa Bay Rays, they're gonna have to pitch well, because the Rays are gonna be, you know, one thing that they, you know, they're gonna do is, you know, they're gonna pitch and you know they're gonna prevent runs. So I think that if it's me, so as things stand right now, I would prefer Danny Jansen behind the plate, just so I know my pitcher is gonna be as comfortable as possible and is gonna be able to be in a groove and is gonna have to be worrying about being on the same page with the guy behind the dish and isn't have to worry about, hey, I'm throwing to a kid right now who a week ago had not played above high A and now is in a postseason game catching me at the big league level, right? Like, we talked to John Schneider about it earlier this week, and what his quote was, like, going from catching in high A to catching the big leagues is like going from taking a walk around New York to like running the New York Marathon.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a massive jump, man. So it's like, you can't, it just like with Vlad at first base, you can't expect Alejandro Kirk to arrive in the majors. It's just like fully formed defensive catcher and to have a perfect handle on like everything that's happening. There's so much that goes into it. There's so much that is learned from experience, and like, he just doesn't have experience. He hasn't played above high A since, you know, until this week. So to me, like, I would think it would be a risk having him catching game two of that series, particularly if you've lost game one.
Sure. And it's definitely a risk. You're taking calculated risks all over the place here. I mean, I think that's part of the fun of the wild card round in particular, is there's a lot of decisions that have a lot of stakes on the direction of this season for the Jays. The other scenario, though, is, you know, if you wait to catch Kirk in game three with Shoemaker, who he worked really well with Shoemaker, and Shoemaker's return from the injured list. And that was great. Shoemaker was saying afterwards he felt great about it. And certainly the stuff looked good there. The collaboration between those guys looked good. Now, I don't know how Taiwan Walker feels about Kirk. That should enter the discussion, obviously, if Walker is indeed that game two starter. So that has to be part of it. And I have no idea. He's not going to tell us exactly what he feels about Alejandro Kirk. So that's part of it. But the other thing is, what if you play, you know, a couple of games, and what if you get eliminated from your season without actually using Alejandro Kirk, who, again, I know it's small sample, but like,
he's your DH. You're using him.
Okay, but then at that point,
you're using the bat, which is what he brings.
Yeah, but you have Vladdy playing first base in that scenario. And it also means that maybe you have Travis Shaw on the bench. You know, maybe Danny Jansen's not hit well. There are players on this team who can hit better than Danny Jansen. So you're taking a hit offensively, too.
How often does the first baseman handle the ball versus the catcher handling the ball is the thing. And, you know, talking about like pitchers being comfortable with the catcher, I think any pitcher is going to say, yeah, give me the guy who has caught more than five times at the big league level. I'll take that guy. Right. Like, if it's up to them, they're obviously, in my opinion, going to take the like more advanced dude and the more experienced dude who has been there before. If the margin of your offense is based on, you know, Danny Jansen's like plate appearances not being great, him batting eighth or ninth, the, you know, four plate appearances tops that he's getting in the game, if that's the margin for you winning or losing, you lost already. Your offense needs to be carried up top by Biggio, by Hernandez, by Grichuk, by Vladimir Guerrero Jr., by Bo freaking Bichette. I don't think that the offensive downside of Danny Jansen, who has not had a great season offensively, is worth the defensive downside of having a really inexperienced dude behind the plate in a postseason game.
I hear that. Here's a scenario for you. What if Rowdy Tellez is making progress? He can move around enough to hit a double. You need the DH spot for him. You know, in that situation, we don't know. Rowdy Tellez told Hazel May this week that he's hoping to be ready for the playoffs. We don't know exactly how much he'll progress, but that's one of the scenarios where it's like, the difference offensively between Tellez to Jansen would be pretty considerable.
That's an interesting one. And then I would almost go Tellez over Kirk at DH and have Kirk on the bench.
Right.
As like a bench
on the bench.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
On the bench. Yeah.
Wow. Because,
like, Tellez has been there before more often at the big league level. You think the, like, Tampa Bay Rays aren't going to, you know how to attack Alejandro Kirk. Like, aren't going to, you know, the guy's never hit above high. Look, I know he had a great game this week, right?
Does anyone, though?
I know, like, everyone loves him, right? Like, I got no problem with the guy. Like, he's great. It's so fun watching him play, right? Like, who cannot enjoy what Alejandro Kirk has done to this point?
A high fly ball towards the right field corner. Gone! Can you believe it? He better break out in a smile round of the bases this time. What a night for Alejandro Kirk.
We can't lose sight of the fact that he has not played above Double A. I know he has looked like he's belonged in, you know, a dozen plate appearances. It's also a dozen plate appearances, man. Like, Rowdy Tellez has way, way, way more plate appearances as a big leaguer. So does Danny Jansen. To me, like, yeah, if Tellez is healthy, but can only healthy and only healthy enough to play DH, not healthy enough to play first base, then to me, Tellez is starting. And Kirk is coming off my bench as a big righty bat who, like, isn't necessarily going to feel the pressure of a pinch hit situation as much as some other guys do, because Kirk's, you know, heart rate does seem to kind of, like, run pretty low. I'm bringing him in, you know, when they match up like a lefty with Travis Shaw late in the game, I'm bringing Kirk in to pinch hit.
Yeah, which is fair. What do you think? So, and again, this is an absurd question. No one could possibly know the answer to this, but what do you think the true talent OPS of Alejandro Kirk is?
I have no idea, because he's so unlike anything we've seen, right? He's had a great start to his career. Right. Like, he's had a great couple games. I'm not going to be the guy who's like crapping all over that. Right. Like, it's great. We're all having fun. But we have to realize, like, how small the sample is. Like, we have to keep it in check.
What more could he do, though? What more could he be than getting, you know, 0-2 singles off Garrett Cole breaking balls and, you know,
ground
taking
ball
pitches?
Single, but fine. It's not like you hit it off the wall, you know?
Yeah, but he made contact. A lot of players whiff at that pitch. And there are other pitches that he has hit off the wall. You know, these are the major leagues, and he's holding his own. I, you know, I'll answer my own question with, I'll just throw out 750. Which is like, that's high. That's really high.
For a catcher, that's, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. For a rookie catcher, you know, even you see some of the notes that the Blue Jays send out, and it kind of puts it in historical context. But, and I was surprised, honestly, when I saw this, but Alejandro Kirk is the youngest catcher in Blue Jays franchise history to hit a home run. He is the youngest catcher since Pudge Rodriguez to have a four-hit game in the major leagues. Like, he's really young. This is rare.
How many 21-year-old catchers are in the big leagues, though, right? You gotta think that's a pretty short field.
Exactly. Because it's a position that requires a lot of apprenticeship on a lot of levels, and it's tough to handle. And we're seeing that. I'm not saying otherwise. I mean, even like, there was one throw, and Buck pointed it out on the broadcast, where it's like, he just didn't have the arm strength, you know? Like, he's throwing this, you know, one hopper, this slow one hopper to second base. It's like, okay, this guy is not, he's not Pudge Rodriguez with the arm. Let's put it that way. I mean, but at the same time, you know, we have to consider this in the context of what the alternatives are. And the alternative here is a guy, and like, I think this goes without saying, both you and I have a lot of respect for Danny Jansen and the work that he's put in to improve himself and become a big league catcher. But Danny Jansen is having some struggles offensively this year, and you need offense.
Sure. I think the 15% walk rate from Danny Jansen is a stat that I will cherry pick right now as I look at his Fangraphs in order to argue against you. the thing is, if Danny Jansen had hit better this year than he has to this point, if Reese McGuire hadn't been, you know, basically disastrous in his major league sample this year, Alejandro Kirk isn't even here, right?
Like, exactly.
He admitted, like, when we asked him the other day, he was like, I didn't think I was going to be in the big leagues this year. Like, I had no clue. So, like, he wouldn't be here. So he is here because the rest of your catchers have been anemic offensively. I definitely think that right now, offensively, Alejandro Kirk is playing better than Danny Jansen. Purely offensively. Yes.
I mean, no question.
Right? But the defensively, I think that Danny Jansen is way, way better suited right now to catch a must-win postseason game.
I hear that.
And there are ways, A, to get Kirk into your lineup without having him behind the plate. But B, even if you don't, like, your offense should be powered by Biggio, Bichette, Hernandez, Grichuk, maybe Tellez if he's available, Gurriel. Like, I don't know that, you know, like, I just think that there's too much to be gained or lost defensively to worry so much about the offensive side.
There are a lot of variables here that we don't know. Time of the game, how Taiwan Walker feels about it, how healthy Rowdy Tellez is. I think all those enter the discussion. And so it would be, you know, it'd be silly to come out and definitively say they have to do this or that. I mean, we don't know. But I think as this last 10 minutes has shown, there is a discussion.
This is a debate.
There definitely is. And that's a credit to Alejandro Kirk, because when they called him up 10 or 11 days ago, there is no way, shape, or form that he should have had a real chance of entering the discussion for starting not one, but, you know, two, three, multiple playoff games for a team that will be in a must-win situation.
I will say, like, it's just fun to watch the way he hits, because like he obviously is like a pretty short individual, so he's got a small strike zone. But even you watch some of, like, you mentioned, like the pitch against Cole that he went down and got, like, some of the pitches that he goes down and gets, like, sometimes he's almost like dropping his back knee to the dirt, you know, like he can like really kind of manipulate his body and manipulate his bat around the zone to get to a bunch of pitches, and then the ball just like explodes off of his bat, you know, like it almost kind of like defies reason and logic, like how he's able to do it, like with his body composition, like, and with his frame, like it just doesn't seem like the, you know, the exit velocities and kind of the line drives that you see coming off of his bat, some of the different pitches that he's able to handle, some of the velocity that he's able to handle. It's like, you know, for a guy of his size to get around on some of these pitches, it's very impressive. Like it's really cool. And like I said, he's got 18 big league plate appearances, right? So we'll see. We won't know by the postseason, like, what he is really as a big league hitter. Like, we'll have no idea. We'll just know, like, what he's done in the tops 35 plate appearances he has by that point, if he gets to that point, right? 30, 32, like, really, when you think about, you know, the playing time over these last few games. So we're really not going to know going into the postseason. He's going to be such an unknown and such a wild card in the postseason, which does make it fun, and I am looking forward to.
Totally. And I mean, if Kirk plays, whether it's DH or catcher, if he plays, I actually think that the Blue Jays lineup is starting to look pretty decent. And you've got a lot of guys coming back to health in the form of Teoscar Hernandez, most importantly, but Rowdy Tellez on his way back, even if Tellez doesn't make it, because there's no guarantee there, to have Vladdy, Gurriel, Bichette, Biggio, Grichuk. It's starting to look pretty good. It's starting to look like a pretty respectable lineup. And they haven't hit, but I think when you look at big picture, what is this team? How could they potentially advance? I really think it comes down to the offense. I think they are an offensive team. I don't think there's a pitching team. And for a while, it looked like they might have a bullpen that would really, you know, shine and really exceed expectations. Health and some regression has gotten in the way of that. I think what this team is an offensive team. And I think for them to win in the playoffs, they are going to have to mash.
I agree it's an offensive team, but I think it's an offensive team that's going to need to pitch against the Rays, right?
I mean, because you need both.
Like, look, you know, Snell, Glasnow, Morton, right? Like, you know, and you might not even get to that third game. Snell, Glasnow, and then we know what the Rays bring out of their bullpen, right? Just this clown car exploding with, you know, 98-mile-an-hour arms. Like, a team that in the Rays that, like, prepares as well as any other team and, like, uses data to its advantage as well as any other team and, you know, like, scouts and prepares and all these things, right? So, like, I think the Blue Jays are going to have to pitch to keep up with the Rays. Like, I'm not expecting the Blue Jays, who knows? So it's one game of baseball, might eat my word. So I'm not expecting the Blue Jays to, like, score 6, 7, 8 runs in any of these games against the Rays, assuming it's the Rays. So I think they're going to have to pitch. They're going to need Hunjin Ryu to be the guy that he's shown he's been all season long. They're going to need Taiwan Walker to carry forward, like, the momentum that he has built. And then they're going to need, you know, arms coming out of the bullpen that are going to be able to get strikeouts, or at least, you know, induce some very weak contact. I think they're just going to have to keep up with them on the pitching side to have any hope in the series.
That's right. But like you said, three games, strange things happen all the time. I mean, you'll see, think of all the weird ebbs and flows we've already seen this season, and there's no predicting what will happen next week.
We shouldn't preview it too much, because we are going to be back on Monday next week to preview the series. If it is the Rays, we assume it'll be the Rays. It'll be somebody. But we will be here on Monday to preview that series. But we have more Blue Jays topics to discuss. So let's step away. And when we come back, we'll discuss them on At The Letters.
Jonathan Davis in straightaway center. He's on the move to the wall, reaches out, makes the catch to finish the ball game. Ken Giles fired up after that final out is recorded, and it's a 4-3 winning edition of
Blue. It continues on at the letters, Ben Nicholson Smith and Arden Zwelling. Ben, we kind of like poured one out for the Blue Jays career of Ken Giles last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, whenever he hit the IL, but we have a bit more information now, and unfortunately he is going to have Tommy John surgery at essentially the worst time in your career as a pitcher that you can have Tommy John surgery, which is after you have established yourself as a very good major league, in this case, reliever, but could also be starter, very good major league pitcher, a very capable one, one that, you know, clubs would be very interesting in paying a lot of money to have pitch for their ball club. Having established that and being, as we sit here right now, like a month and a half from free agency, maybe even less, like 5 weeks from free agency, having to go and have a procedure with a recovery timeline of like 12 to 18 months. Like, I just cannot express how dispiriting it is to see a guy at this point in his career have to go for that kind of surgery.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's no easy time to have Tommy John, but this timing, as we said the other week, like it's such rough timing. And you think about, even, you know, in contrast to this, a guy like Justin Verlander, who's also going to have Tommy John surgery. Well, Verlander has one more year on his deal. So Verlander, he's going to be making whatever his full salary, $35 million, whatever it is, and recovering at the Astros facilities. He'll have the use of those facilities and doctors and trainers and all the infrastructure that he would normally have access to. In the case of Giles, now he might sign a two-year deal over the course of this winter, and he might be able to at least access some of those facilities if he wants, or have access to, you know, trainers, doctors, all that sort of thing. And we've seen precedent for that with pitchers signing two-year deals as they recover from Tommy John. And Shai wrote about that at Sportsnet this week. So there's some reading material out there for anyone looking for it. But yeah, you know, it's still a different story. And of course, it's going to affect the bottom line of what he can be paid.
Yeah. And well, and Verlander's already like made his money really in his career. Like he's already like, you know, inked like a very large contract. Like he's made his money. And like, look, nobody's, you know, feeling bad for Ken Giles's career earnings. But you look at it, like you mentioned, like Justin Verlander's probably in like the, you know, I don't know, $28-30 million range this year. Ken Giles in his career has made like 20, you know? So, and like Verlander makes that in a year, you know? And Ken Giles was like right on the cusp of big free agent deal. And like, relievers obviously have been a pretty devalued commodity in the game anyway, but like we have seen that, you know, if you're a lights out closer, like if you can put up a season like Ken Giles did in 2019, you can still do well. Like you can still make your money, man. So like it sucks. Like he's gonna have to go the route of, like you said, like a David Phelps, or, you know, somebody who, yeah, maybe you sign a two-year deal, maybe he doesn't sign a deal for next season and he just like rehabs and does his own thing. Maybe his agency can set him up with some, you know, with his rehab situation or whatever, and put him in a good environment to get better. And then he has to kind of sign like a prove it deal following that, maybe off of like a bullpen that he has to throw like two off seasons from now to show people that he can still do it. It's probably going to be a ton of incentives in there. Like it just sucks at this point. Like if he had hit the market after 2019, after the season that he had, he would have done really, really well for himself. And you think about, you know, how long players are under club control for, right? And how long they kind of earn the big league minimum, and then having to go through the arbitration process, which also suppresses your earning power. You know, like Ken Giles has provided surplus value to every team that he's been on, and he's not going to recoup that in free agency. So just from purely a player perspective, that sucks. From a Blue Jays perspective, that sucks as well, because you didn't have Ken Giles at all this year. Club perspective, you didn't have the player on the mound contributing to wins. You also weren't able to, in the cold, calculated business side of things, kind of get return on the quote unquote asset, right? Like Blue Jays weren't able to trade him at the height of his value last year. They, you know, they weren't able to trade him this year in both cases because of the medicals and because he was hurt. Nobody wins. Everybody loses, and it sucks.
Yeah, totally. And you know, the Jays, I think that's, in a sense, it's disappointing. And I know, I think there's this aversion sometimes when it comes to fans of like, oh, the Jays got nothing for this guy if he leaves as a free agent. And that's true, I guess. And certainly in the sense of Giles, I mean, they got nothing from him this year. I think when it comes to pitching, though, it's not only that you need to get something of, you know, concrete value for these guys, something tangible. But part of the nature of dealing with pitching is some of these guys are going to go down. So you're not going to have 100% return rate where every single pitcher that you trade for or sign or acquire is going to produce. Some of them are going to get hurt. Some of them are going to give you quote unquote nothing in return. It sucks, but that's the way it is. And I think, you know, for the Jays, it would be easier to bear if they had a bullpen that was at full health right now. Jordan Romano down, Julian Merriweather down. The absence of Giles is going to be pretty apparent as the Jays try to lock things down in the late innings.
Yeah, they didn't get nothing. They got 78 appearances as a Toronto Blue Jay at a 2.83 ERA. And his K per nine is definitely off the charts. 13.1 K per nine. Like, can't say enough. Like, the 2019 Ken Giles season was one of the best thrown by a reliever in this uniform ever in the history of the franchise. Coming into this season, I would have expected at the very least that the Blue Jays would be getting something in return for like a qualifying offer at the end of the year. This is pre-pandemic. I don't know. I guess the pandemic kind of changes all that calculus a little bit, but I would have expected at least like they were going to get some sort of compensatory draft pick coming back their way when Ken Giles left, but ain't going to happen. But like you said, they still got the production from him in 2019. It's not his fault that they, you know, put a pretty lousy team around him. They had this lights out closer and, didn't really have that many games for him to save. Speaking of things that could be coined disappointments, the season of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 2020. So let's just like look at some cold, hard numbers. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this season is hitting, this is through Wednesday to September 23rd here, he's hitting 249. With a 324 on base and a 437 slug. That is a 761 OPS, a 107 OPS plus, suggesting that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is 7% better than league average. Last season, 106 OPS plus, 6% better than league average. Now, this year, with Vlad's got 54 games, 219 plate appearances. So that's like a third of a normal season. It's hard to kind of take like the sample from this year and be like, that's what he was that year, because it's only a third of the runway that he would normally have in order to have his stats fluctuate and go up and down and make adjustments and tweaks and change to how he's being pitched and see what his numbers look like, you know, after 600 plate appearances and 150 games. So it's hard to kind of, you know, look at this season in a vacuum. We can look at sort of the first two seasons of his career. And we can see 177 games played so far in his first two seasons, 733 plate appearances, decent sample, pretty large, 106 OPS plus, 6% better than league average. In some ways, Ben, is that a disappointment?
Yeah, there's no question it's a disappointment. Like, just consider where expectations were externally and even internally, because there's a difference there, right? So externally, the expectations were off the charts. We all know this. You and I contributed to it.
It's our fault.
You know, intentionally
blame
or not.
Us.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Vladdy was going to be just like next level. I thought he was going to be so, so good after that 2018 season he had. I mean, there's no question. I you can go back and listen to the episodes. Like, I can't pretend otherwise. I thought he was going to be amazing. So that hasn't happened. And that was the outside expectation. And that, my opinion, was informed by the Baseball Americas, the Keith Laws, the, you know, these people who evaluate prospects publicly for a living and do this year after year. And everyone was saying Vlad Jr. is a different kind of hitting prospect.
People with other teams in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not just like Blue Jays people, like people with other clubs in the game who are like, this kid can't miss. He's incredible.
100%. I remember at the winter meetings before the 2019 season, there was an interaction where someone was just like, just heaping praise on Vlad Jr. from another team. Just heaping praise. He was like, this guy he's so good. He's so much better than everyone else. So going into the season, I remember thinking, all right, like, this is it. And so all that added up to insane, outside expectations. Then internally, we don't know exactly what the Blue Jays expected that they would get from Vlad Jr. We do know that they were more skeptical of Vlad Jr. than the broad industry. They had seen him up close. Ross Atkins made comments that in hindsight were, you know, actually sort of foreboding of what was to come. When he said in the spring of 2019, we don't feel Vlad Jr. is a major league player right now. There were some other comments that, you know, hinted at the kind of challenges remaining for Vlad Jr. as he looked to develop into his full self as a big leaguer. But even then, even knowing that the Blue Jays were somewhat more skeptical than the industry as a whole, the Jays, I guarantee, they would not have said that 750 appearances into his career, that he's going to be a 106 OPS plus first baseman whose conditioning is still, you know, a matter of discussion, a matter of question for this team. There's no way they would have said that. They were hoping for more. And the fact that they started him at third base, that they were hoping for more defensively. I guarantee they were hoping for more offensively than a 106 OPS plus. And I know they're hoping for more from a conditioning standpoint because they're on the record saying as much on multiple occasions. So, you know, internally, externally, wherever you set the expectations, Vlad Jr. has not reached them. Now, it's not to say that he hasn't been a useful player. You know, he has been a useful player. He's a good major league player. He probably has a good future ahead of him. And he's learned a lot. He has improved in some demonstrable ways, some important ways. So it's not to say that, you know, Vlad Jr. hasn't helped the Blue Jays. They need him. He has helped them. He continues to help them. He's a franchise piece for this team. But has he been a disappointment relative to the expectations that he faced? Yes.
That's the thing, right? Is that so? Because like I'll like go on the radio sometimes and they'll be like, you know, if this was a regular season, would Vladimir Guerrero Jr. even, you know, be in the majors? And they've demoted him to the minors. And like, would he even be in the lineup? Yes, of course. He's 106 OPS plus. He's an above league average hitter. That's like by definition, he should be in your lineup. He's better than league average. You don't have nine dudes who are better than league average as hitters. So of course, he's going to be in your lineup. Like, of course you should be with this team. And like, of course, being 21 years old and younger than Alejandro Kirk, which like gets so lost in the shuffle. Think about how people think of Alejandro Kirk, right? And just like, wow, this super young guy who all of a sudden is like in the majors and so much is being asked of him. Well, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is younger than him.
Yeah.
He's younger than like, you know, a lot of players who were drafted this year. Being 21 years old and a above league average MLB hitter is uncommon. Like that is like not something that happens often. Maybe because not that many like 21 year olds like get that opportunity to go and like hit in the big leagues. But I think that the vast majority of like 21 year old ball players in affiliated systems, if you put them in the big leagues, probably don't put up a 107 OPS plus. Like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. like has some very unique traits and skills as a hitter, and like you can see it there.
1-1 from Voth, and a breaking ball hit high in the air left center field. The outfielders collide, and where's the ball? Is it out? The ball is out. It's a home run for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
But that's sort of why it is a disappointment, is because the potential is so much higher. And it's so obvious that like he could be so much better than just merely slightly above average. Like he could be exceptional. Like he could be really, really, really good. You know, like we talked to Dante Bichette about him, and like Dante Bichette will talk to us about like Randall Grichuk and Teoscar Hernandez, talk to us about his own kid, Bo and Kevin Biggio and all these guys. And he'll talk to us about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And he'll say, Vlad could win a batting title. He doesn't say that about anybody else, right? Like he doesn't say that about the other hitters. Like you don't just like throw that out there. Vlad could win a batting title. You look at what he did in the minors and it's obvious that it is there. Like those are high levels of the minors that he did that stuff against. Like that season at Double A that he had when he hit like 400, like there's good dudes at Double A. He went to Triple A, continued to tear it up against veteran pitching, against pitchers who like know much more what they're trying to do and how to attack you. For one reason or another, it has not translated to the big leagues. And it doesn't mean that it's like it never will. It doesn't mean that he's never going to figure it out. Like he's got so much career ahead of him being 21 years old. Like he has so many years to make the adjustments he needs to and to get more comfortable. Not everybody just like hits the ground running when they get to the big leagues. But I think that, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier with like the expectations that were set and maybe like mea culpas that people like you and I have to make. I think one of them is that he was not ready when he was called up. And you can probably dig up the tape from, you know, prior to his call up early in the 2019 season. And you'd see us saying, look at these minor league numbers. Look at what he's done. He hasn't found a level of baseball that's challenged him yet. He's a big leaguer. Ross Atkins, how could you say he's not a major league player? He's clearly a major league player. Why are you manipulating his service time? We need to call him up, this, that, and the other. I'm coming around to we were wrong. Like we were incorrect. Like he was not ready for the big leagues for the reasons you cited. You know, conditioning wasn't good enough. Defense still isn't strong enough. And the bat, I mean, while yes, is above average in the big leagues, is not fulfilling the potential that is in there. And I don't know if more minor league seasoning would have helped him fulfill that potential. But I do think that as we sit here right now through the first 170 games, whatever number I cited, it is kind of, you know, becoming clear to me that like the Blue Jays were very correct, that he would have benefited from more time in the minors early on in 2019 before earning that promotion.
It's interesting, right? Because there's no question that Vladdy was not a fully formed major leaguer in the way that we thought he was, in the way that the outside expectations suggested that he could be or should be. At the same time, you know, I'm still not convinced that he would have necessarily learned those lessons at AAA. I mean, if you're at AAA and you're just crushing the pitching down there, or AA, whatever the case, upper minors, and you're just crushing the pitching, is that going to be the kick in the rear end that says, oh, wait a second, I actually do need to get my conditioning, you know, better, the routines, to borrow the phrase that the Toronto Blue Jays would use? Or is that going to be the kick in the rear end that makes you say, you know what, my defense is just not quite there. I know I've got this good throwing arm, but I don't know that I'm necessarily reacting to some of these really hard hit balls, or I'm not sure that I've got the instincts. You know, I need to go out there and do some early work. I don't know that he comes to that realization at AAA. So I think that there's something to be said for promoting the guy and having him fail at the major league level, because that makes it clear to everyone involved, hopefully including the player himself, that he has some more work to do.
Yeah, and you know, you make a good point in that if you are waiting for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be this like cut up, shredded like specimen, and if you are waiting for him to you know, be a plus defender, you're going to be waiting a long, long time, right? Like those, I just don't know that those things are in his future. You know, clearly the conditioning has to improve, and clearly something went wrong during the pandemic. Something went awry in his plan, because in spring, the conditioning had improved and he looked better and he had like added muscle. It looked like he had leaned out. Like he was, you know, everybody was raving about the work that he'd done over last offseason. Like last winter, he was in Dunedin frequently, like working out with Scotty Weberg and guys down there, and lifting and, you know, eating the food that he should be eating, and go to Puerto Rico and like call up Louis Rivera and take ground balls with him and stuff. And he was going to be a third baseman in spring training. And then pandemic hit, the shutdown treated all of us differently, and we all handled it differently. But it's very clear that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did not handle it as well as he could have as a like high performance professional athlete. Came back to summer camp and like that, his all that work and the conditioning improvements they had made clearly diminished and like clearly had been walked back. And now all of a sudden he's having to change positions and play first base. And by the way, like designated hit half the time, just so you can have his bat in the lineup every day, right? Like we haven't seen those scheduled days off anymore that he had to have in 2019 because the club thought like, hey, you're going to get hurt if you're playing third base every day. But he's had these DH days because he hasn't been fit enough to play first base every day. Clearly, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. like does best conditioning, nutrition-wise, body composition-wise when he's around the Blue Jays environment, when he kind of goes away and like is working out with, you know, guys over Zoom or whatever they were doing during the pandemic, and like it's kind of up to him to be on top of that stuff. Clearly it doesn't go well. It's 21, right? Like that's, you know, he's young, right? Like it that might improve as his life goes on and as he ages and as he kind of learns more about his body and kind of takes more responsibility for his quote unquote routines. But for now, it's very clear that like he needs to be around this Blue Jays environment, because you've seen over the course of this season, like he's gone into better shape and he's started to look better in the uniform. And like, you know, the results got better there kind of in the middle of the season. And now lately they've kind of tailed off a bit, and we'll see how he finishes. But like, if I'm the Blue Jays, as far as it comes to, you know, conditioning and putting him in the best position possible to be successful going forward, now that he is a big leaguer, I need him in my environment as much as possible during the offseason, which is tough because you can't force him to do anything. Like you can't, it's his choice. Like he has to want to do it. But if you want him to be at his best in 2021 and beyond, I mean, you need him working with your people and around your environment, like I said.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And it certainly lines up with what we've seen, what the Blue Jays have described to us when it comes to the ebbs and flows of Vladdy's conditioning. I don't want to rip on the guy. I think he's going to have some great moments with the Blue Jays, and I think he's going to have great seasons with the Blue Jays, even if the conditioning doesn't necessarily change or the defense doesn't necessarily change. I still believe he's such a talented offensive player that, and we're going to see that. And we might see it as soon as this October. Like, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he, you know, has a 2-home run game against Blake Snell. We're talking about that for 5 years, you know, like that's he's a super talented player. But at the same time, you know, for him to be 21 years old, and not only has he already moved to first base, but like you said, he's kind of, he's DHing a lot. It's not even like he's really got a handle on first base, really. Like, and he's told us he's more comfortable over there. At first he was uncomfortable. Now he's gaining, which is great. You know, he's building momentum, but still, you know, even compared to a Travis Shaw, Rowdy Tellez, guys who have played that position for years, you can tell he's not entirely comfortable. So we'll see where it goes. The Jays need him. You know, he's obviously, he's a big part of this offense and will be for the next 6 years at least, but still there always will be questions circling around Vlad and everything else because he is the son of a Hall of Famer and he's someone who arrived with insane expectations.
And because it's so clear that he could be so much better than he is right now.
He could
be. You look at the exit velocities from the guy. Like, you look at how hard he hits the ball. Like, he's top 10% of MLB hitters in terms of how hard this guy hits the ball. Like, routinely over 95 miles an hour, over 100 miles an hour. Like, he barrels it. The problem, clearly, over the first 170 games or so, is too many of those balls have gone down into the ground, right? And this is a guy who is not well conditioned, and to, or at least not conditioned well enough to beat out infield singles, right? Like, it's a pretty low sprint speed on the guy, so he's not gonna, it's kind of like the Kendrys Morales problem, right? Like, where it's, you know, he hits the ball like hard as hell, but he can't run well enough to, you know, get the most out of that if they aren't line drives consistently. And pitchers in the big leagues aren't pitching, you know, to you to hit, for you to hit line drives, right? Like, they're trying to like bust you up and in, and they're trying to like get you to chase like breaking balls, you know, and they're trying to get you to roll over stuff, and they're, you know, trying to expose your flaws and attack your weaknesses. So, like, and look, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. knows he hits too many ground balls. Everybody knows that. Like, it's the easiest thing to say in the world. The Blue Jays are trying to work with him to, you know, to get some of those balls that have kind of gone down into the ground to kind of go sort of up in on that line drive trajectory, because then if you do like hit it as hard as he does, it's either going to go off the wall or like over it. Like, think about how many home runs we've seen from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. They're just like on a rope and just like collide with back at Rogers Center with like the wall behind the bullpen. Clearly the ability is there for him to be like a really special hitter at this level and in this league, but like clearly there are some adjustments that need to happen. And like you said, it's not just offensively, it's defensively as well, because you want the guy to be able to play a position going forward. At 21, you don't want him to be your DH every day. Like, you want him to be capable at first base. He's got like 30 games there in his life, essentially, like at this level. Certainly it's not going to happen overnight, but it's like the instincts at first are sort of completely different than they are at third. Like, that's why I would, you know, guess you are seeing him go to his right so often on like some of those balls that should be the second baseman's ball, where he should be at first to catch a throw, because he's used to third base to going to his right and getting the ball. Like, you go get the ball, right? So like the instinct is completely reversed. He's using a different glove at first base, which like I would assume, I'm just guessing, would assume might, you know, take a bit of adapting in order to make some of those picks and some of those digs in the dirt that you need to be able to make as a first baseman. I mean, it's a lot to take on, man. He's learning a lot at the big league level, but it's going to happen at the big league level because, like, as I said earlier, you know, like, A, he's here, clock's ticking on him. B, like, there's no reason to demote him. There's no reason, even if you had a minor leagues, to take him out of your lineup right now. So he's going to have to learn this stuff and, you know, kind of round out this development in the majors, which is like a really hard thing to do. That's going to be his challenge going forward. Like, and here we are sitting in the last week of his second year, you know, like the Blue Jays should have 7 years of like quote unquote contractual control over him, but he's nearly an arbitration player, man. Like, he's getting there. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, he's still got 2 more years before ARB, but he'll be super right? 2. That's right. I think, you know, when I look at Vladdy, I think there's still, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you still have to be dreaming on this guy, you know, not in the exact same way that you were a couple of years ago. But I think about the Yankees, maybe because the Jays have been playing the Yankees so much in the last couple of weeks here. But I think about guys like G. Urshela and Luke Voit, who've just gotten into better shape. And then with that, I don't know if this is correlation or causation, I don't know what exactly the relationship is, But Voit has become a far better hitter. Urshela has really come into his own as a hitter and obviously as a defender.
Devers,
that's another guy, you know, whose offensive improvement of 2019 came at the same time that he got himself into better shape. So I don't know exactly what the relationship is. I just can't imagine that it would hurt.
Yeah. So it's like, look, we're going to talk plenty about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. like in the years to come. I still think that, like, I still believe that he will figure it out. Like, I still do believe that there is, like, an MVP caliber season, like, in there. I don't know if it's, like, the routine MVP caliber seasons that you see from, like, you know, like a Trout or a Lindor or whoever. Like, it's not, I don't know that it's going to be, like, an every year thing. His career might just be one that kind of fluctuates. But, you know, you can't lose sight of the fact of, like, just how damn young he is, you know? Like, just, like, that's the one that, like, really drove it home to me. It was, like, younger than Alejandro Kirk. And I was like, holy crap, like, yeah. Like that, you know, and he's got like two full seasons in the bigs at this point. There is so much more road here. Like when you like think about, I know that players like the league is getting younger progressively, which I think is like a good thing. And also part of the reason why, like when I think about mea culpas with calling him up, I'm also just like, screw that, like get paid. Like you should have the best players in the big leagues and let them figure it out. You know, I like from the player perspective, call him up, right? But the league is getting younger. But what would you say is like the prime in 2020 of a big league position player, like of a hitter? Like what would you, where would you say that prime kind of falls? So typically it's been like 27 to 31,
yeah,
sort of. Is it earlier now?
Yeah. Right? Man, I don't know how much earlier. I would say maybe prime would be 23 to 27 now.
Right.
So that's off the top of my head.
That's even more aggressive than I would have gone. Like I would have gone like 24 to 29, sort of like in that type of like sort of 5 year gap. Vlad's not even near there. Even if you go with yours at 23, it's 21. It's 2 years from now before he's even near his prime. So, you know, if his pre-prime is like above average league, like above league average hitter, then his, I'm really twisting myself in the knots here, then his prime could be like that much better. I don't know. But like, it's just, you can't forget like how young he is, how much has been asked of him. And you can't forget like the story isn't over, you know, like it's not like there's no reason to write him off. There's no reason to like get too down on him. Like he's got so much time to turn this around and to rewrite his career narrative and to put himself in a position where like 10 years from now with like whichever younger, more interesting and handsome people are hosting at the Letters at that point, we'll be talking about, look back on the last 10 years and how good Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was. And then you're going to look at his baseball reference page and be like, wow, those first 2 years were like just kind of pedestrian and okay. That's kind of interesting. Like the way they frame it will be like, wow, he just kind of was getting up to speed rather than the way it's sometimes is framed now where it's like, this is what he is. You know what I mean?
100%. You know, there's wherever this leads, like you said, this is just the beginning of his career and it could go worse than this. Like we don't know, right? We don't know, but it could also get a lot better. And there's clearly the potential for it to get a lot better, which is for the Blue Jays, where they're going to direct their time and energy.
It's always the potential to be better. Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Our producers are Mike DeSoni and Christian Ryan. As I mentioned earlier, we are going to be back on Monday of next week once we know the Blue Jays playoff opponent. And we'll be setting that series up for you. 2 to 3 games in a wild card series starting on September 29th. And then depending on what happens there, we'll be back to talk to you again, perhaps about a team that is packing up and going home or a team that is going on to a bubble in San Diego or Los Angeles. I promise you one thing, it's going to be very interesting to watch play out. So from all of us here at Letters, thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time on At The Letters.